This is Neil Nelson. I'm with EPA's Office of Radiation and Indoor Air, and I will introduce you to radionuclide toxicology. Slide 81 lists the agent overview. There are two general types, naturally occurring, such as radium, uranium, thorium, and man-made, produced by reactors, accelerators, or cyclotrons, nuclear weapons. They include many of the famous ones people talk about, such as neutron capture products, plutonium-239, americium-241, and fission products that accumulate in fuel rods, in reactors, or in nuclear detonations, such as cesium-137, strontium-90, cobalt-60, and then there are some accelerator-produced medical isotopes, such as iodine-123 and cobalt-57. One thing you should remember about these radionuclides is that they are unstable isotopes with the same chemical and most of the physical properties of stable isotopes of the same element. So all prior chemistry discussion would cover these. The radionuclides have unstable nuclei which want to become stable, and they do this by emitting ionizing radiation. This is why, or what is referred to as the radioactivity. The radiations might be alpha radiation, in which the particle emitted is two neutrons plus two protons, the same as the helium atom nucleus. It might be beta radiation, which is a particle emitted from the nucleus consisting of an electron or a proton, or it might be gamma radiation, which might be either the gamma photon or might be an X-ray photon. Next slide, please. Slide 83 lists the fact that radiochemical agents might fall into one or multiple radiation categories. They might be something like strontium-90, which is a pure beta emitter. However, most radioisotopes emit either both beta and gamma, or alpha and gamma radiations. The current sources of radiochemical agents out in the environment are oil exploration equipment, naturally radio-occurring isotopes at mining and milling sites for uranium, and also a lot of rare earths have thorium. Power generation equipment, or reactors, weapons production, maintenance and disposal, which is government facilities. Then there are also large radiation sources in food and medical irradiators, and some fairly large sources in industrial radiography. Slide 84 shows that there are small quantities in constant use in many activities, such as medical tests and procedures, in the food industry, and in laboratory and scientific research. Slide 85 lists fate and transport and health effects. Fate and transport, if they're in solution, they will usually remain in solution, but they will be removed by any procedures which would remove that allotope, that element, from solution. They're highly absorbed in biological systems, and concentrations will likely be uniform in a distribution system. Health effects include exposure at low levels for a long duration, or at a high but non-lethal lethal level for a short duration. General long-term health effect is induction of cancers. All radioisotopes are considered to be carcinogenic and have an MCLG of zero. Extremely high doses in short-term exposure events can cause cellular damage that may be significant enough to result in death, but this is expected to be unlikely. Many radioactive agents are organ-specific. For example, iodines in the thyroid gland, uranium uptake and toxicity in the kidneys. For contaminated water, the most significant health risk will be ingestion. Water itself can significantly attenuate the alpha and beta radiation, which will shield you from them. But it only minimally attenuates gamma radiation. So there is a reduced threat of direct exposure from most of the isotopes in water. However, the fact that it only minimally attenuates gamma radiation makes it possible to detect and identify at least as a radionuclide with fairly sensitive field equipment and something that's easy to use. Slide 87 talks about properties such as toxicity. What's toxicity? How poisons or harmful substances in specific amounts. How does that help assess the threat? Some radioisotopes may result in both chemical and radiation-induced toxicity. Chemical toxicity is really only of greater concern with one isotope, uranium-238, the naturally occurring uranium. An LD50 for chemical toxicity for radionuclides would be very much higher than the MCL. However, it should be noted that even a single alpha particle may induce a mutation event if the alpha emitter is in your body. Limitations? Toxicity studies for radiochemical contaminants don't cover all chemical species. Most radiation exposure limits are based on dosimetric models combined with radiation dose response models rather than empirical studies. However, unfortunately, we do have a fair amount of information on human response to radiation. And so that is used with some animal model support. Slide number 88 talks about speciation. And again, this speciation will be the same as for any chemical compound of the same element. Make salts, oxides, hydroxides, etc. This may help assess the threat since you can identify forms of radioactive species that may be in solution. And as for chemicals, the different species will have different properties relevant to chemical fate and transport and health effects. Limitations, it can be used only to estimate the actual threat of the contaminant concern. Slide 89 talks about solubility. Again, the same as for chemicals, the amount of solid that can be dissolved in a solvent. It can be used to help assess the exposure risk. However, radiochemical compounds with relatively high solubility may be more of a threat. But low solubility does not equate to a low threat. The species of the radioactive material of interest may be changed from one with low solubility to one with high solubility. Slide 90. What are the limitations? Solubility of the radiochemicals depends on pH and oxidizing potential of the water. Solubility is also influenced by dominant anionic coordinating species in the water. For example, sulfates, nitrates, carbonates, and chlorides. It also can be reacting with humic acids, etc. Many radiochemicals are used in sealed sources for medical and industrial applications, and they are in soluble forms, impregnated ceramics, or plated on steel. Slide 91 talks about reactivity, the ability to undergo a chemical reaction with other constituents in the matrix. This can help assess the threat because it can affect solubility. It's an important factor in fate and transport assessment. And water drawn from the bottom of the storage tank may have a higher concentration of the radioactive contaminant if mixing and turnover only minimally affects the storage facilities and the distribution system. So that could be important in assessing how much is there. Slide 92. What other limitations should you be aware of? Reactivity is influenced by pH, redox potential, residual chlorine, and other chemical properties of water in the distribution system. the properties and distribution may not be the same as those for the reference radioactivity of radiochemicals. Slide 93. Specific activity is an important component of assessing radionuclide toxicology. What is specific activity? It is a measure of radioactivity per unit weight of the contaminant. How does this information help assess the threat? It is used to determine the radioactive intensity of the contaminant. The more radioactive the contaminant, that is, the higher the specific activity, the greater the potential health effect. And what limitations should you be aware of? Values usually provided for pure solids, and the information will have to be adjusted for the dilution effects in water. Slide 94. Another property which is different is half-life. Half-life is the elapsed time required for one half of the radioactive material present to undergo radioactive decay. This is a physical process, not chemical or biological, so it will go on. It can be useful in calculating specific activities, and the specific activity used to assess the intensity of radioactivity present in the drinking water. It is also used to evaluate persistence of the nuclide in the environment. What limitations are there? No significant limitations. They're physical constants. However, radioactive isotopes, particularly of the naturally occurring radioisotopes, occur in chains. That means when they decay, they produce a daughter. Often these daughter products are unstable and will continue to decay. And so you will go down a chain of decays of various isotopes until you reach a stable one. As they go down the chain, they change their change to different elements and different activities. And so the potency of the daughter products must also be addressed when you're considering the effects. Slide 95, principal daughter products. What are the principal daughter products? They are stable radioactive isotopes formed when a specific radioisotope, current radioisotope, decays. This can be used to identify other radioisotopes present from the decay of the listed radioactive contaminant, and they may have different stability, toxicity, and solubility compared to the parent. So you must evaluate the risk of daughters independently. However, this might be helpful because often the daughter has a different radiation. It might be gamma radiation, which would be easier to detect and identify. What limitations are there? No significant limitations. These are all physical constants which have been determined experimentally. Slide 96. The challenges for detection. Well, radiochemical contaminants in water generally cannot be identified by a change in most physical properties of the water. Radiation can neither be seen nor smelled, tasted nor heard, so you have to detect it with instrumentation. Determining contaminant properties is useful primarily in assessing radiation exposure risk after an agent is identified, not identifying the presence of the contaminant itself. Going to be very hard to detect. There are advanced environmental radiochemistry labs that have the capability and capacity, and they should be used if they're present at drinking waters. However, it ain't very good right now, so the capability and capacity of the drinking water utility should be enhanced. Slide 97. Continuing. While it is possible to screen for specific types of radioactivity, no method is available for field screening of all types of radioactivity in water. Current GM probes, that's Geiger-Müller, that's a gas ionization probe, can detect gamma activity in water. However, the alpha and beta radiations are shielded to a large extent by the water and thus present a challenge in the area of rapid detection. Geiger counter screening is limited for water screening and can identify only gross beta and gamma radioactivity and very limited ability to screen for alpha emitters. There are, however, high efficiency gamma detectors, scintillation detectors, which can identify fission products that are often beta-gamma emitters and can identify fewer beta emitters such as strontium-90 or iodine-129 or the presence of alpha-emitting contaminants such as plutonium-238-239. A scintillation detector can often be used in conjunction with other equipment to identify specific radionuclides present. Slide 98 leads us to part 6 on gathering and managing information, which will be given by Steve Allgaier.